This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 88.3 FM, 89.5 FM, and 92.5 FM in good old central Illinois, from the Twin Cities to Pontiac. We're also aiming at Lincoln, and we hope to be able to get the means to do it. And you, yes, you can help. Donate now. Go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can also call the station at 309-807-2427. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com and our station at 309-807-2427. Remember, we're brought to you by you. Be faithful, be traditional, and be Catholic.
Remember, this is a mission, and you can be part of this mission by supporting it with prayers and financially if you can. You'll be a part of something. Just keep, you know, we need your help.
One of the things you can do to evangelize is tell everybody out there to listen. If you listen, you'll learn more about your Catholic faith. And the more you learn about your Catholic faith, the more you'll be able to answer questions from other people if they come to you with a question. You'll feel more confident that you'll be able to talk to people. And you'll be doing evangelizing, and it'll just come naturally. So it's important to listen, and if you're listening, please bring a friend or tell your friends to listen, or if somebody asks you a question, refer them to Catholic Radio and say, listen to our station, and you'll learn a lot. So those are a lot of things that you can do, and like Lynn says, we need your prayers, and pray for the station, pray for your church, and pray for our country and all the people around you. It can do nothing but help. It certainly can't do any harm. And it's one of the things that you're called to do. And it's a great way to evangelize. And you don't have to go out there and stand on the street corner and hand out brochures or stand and talk to people or corner people or catch them by the collar. All you have to do is start listening and learning, and you will be evangelizing.
Spread the word.
That's right. At any rate, we've got a great show for you today, and you've heard my wife, Lynn, talking already. I'm with her, and it's going to be a conversational show, I hope. There is so much going on in our society. We're still going to be on that broad subject for a little while. We did talk last week about a number of things in the news, and we're going to pick up a little bit there where we left off as a jumping point to get into some of the things we want to touch on today. And I hope we'll have a great show for you just in doing that. And being a little conversational about, give you some ideas and thoughts, maybe in a different direction about what's going on today. So that's what we're going to do. So I'll jump in with that. Of course, everybody knows the circus, I call it, and I don't know what you call it, that's been going on in Virginia.
Even the news, some news broadcasts label it the circus in Virginia.
That's correct, and I think that it's sort of appropriate in a way that this is happening in Virginia. That's why I'm using it as a springboard to go into our conversation, because so much of our revolution, the American Revolution, took place in Virginia, and from people that were from Virginia. Madison and Jefferson, of course, were Virginians, and a number of other of our founders were also Virginians. And we've talked before that they have given us a constitution and a government that is so-called secular, if there is such a thing, and I don't really think there is. All issues eventually boil down to religious issues, no matter what you do, and there's no such thing as a secular. I've said that before. But at any rate, it is one that doesn't really give us a blueprint for agreement on ethics, morals, virtues, and that kind of thing. And I've always said on this show and this station that one of the things the Catholic Church has to offer our society and all of the world, for that matter, and Catholics should take pride in, is a body of tradition about morals and virtues that have been handed down all the way from the time of Christ to now, without change. That is our tradition, our dogma, our doctrines. All of those have been handed down from Jesus Christ until now without change. And that's one of the beautiful things about the Catholic Church. We've improved our dogma, improved the understanding of our dogmas, understanding of our doctrines, but we haven't changed them. And I've talked about that before. doctrine and dogma can grow in a sense that
And it can be clarified, I think, it's what you're drawing at.
Exactly. A puppy can grow into a dog, but he doesn't become a cat. He becomes more doggy, not less doggy. And so that's the same thing with a dogma or a tradition. It can grow and become larger in a sense that we can understand it more and apply it more to more people and more instances and things, but it doesn't change. And so this is going to be a jumping off point to start that conversation about what our church has to offer to the world, to our society. And, you know, the fact is that it built Western civilization in the first place. There wasn't any until the Catholic Church came into existence before the fall of Rome. And then when Rome fell, it was the institution that rebuilt civilization, and it was the light that shined in the darkness and kept a lot of the learning and so forth that was lost during the fall of Rome all the way up until this day, and laid the foundations for our Western civilization. It was a rocky road, and you can picture the Catholic Church as being some kind of a coach driving along that road, swinging around turns, barely missing rocks, getting over bridges just in time before they fell. And so it was a bumpy ride up and down. It wasn't smooth, but it did, in the long run, with its morals, its teachings, and its values, build Western civilization with all of its greatness and, of course, with all of its warts and all of its bad things, too. So this is
the bark of Peter.
The bark of Peter.
On that choppy sea going between the reefs and so forth. That's been how the church has been explained and all it's come through.
Exactly. And it started out as a little tiny boat, you know, on the Sea of Galilee. And when the storm came up, what did the apostles do? They cried for Jesus to do something. In other words, they were looking for something to hang on to in the face of a huge storm. And every civilization goes through this, and we're going through it right now with ours right here in the United States. And so we need something to hang on to in the face of the storm that we're going through. And this is something that you as a Catholic can be proud of, because your church has to offer a formula that has lasted for over 2,000 years and has built all of Western civilization, Europe, the United States, and so forth, with, again, all of its glory, but also all of its problems and its frailties, too.
That's right. But with the help of God and the dependence that Christ said he would be with us to the end, we'll get through it.
But I think, again, the show down in Virginia that's going on sort of illustrates how lost our godless secular state is without Catholic and, of course, Christian virtues and values. And those, of course, at one time all the way up until very recently, until 500 years ago, were Catholic. And much of the Christianity that was taken from that point on, even up until now, and the values and the virtues and the ethics that we live by, they still have roots that go back to the Catholic Church, because our Protestant brothers and sisters took much of it with them when they left the church. So it's something that we as a Western civilization have in common, and it needs to be reinstated again. And it isn't only that our government needs to have God in its constitution and in its thinking, but it needs to have especially some of the solid Catholic teachings that have lasted through the centuries.
That's right. Got onward and Christian soldiers. Got to keep moving.
But at any rate, you know, let's review this case that's going on in Virginia and see if we can actually apply some of the Catholic thinking that has actually been incorporated right into our governmental laws as part of Christianity, even though in effect, our secular state has been divorced from them. Nevertheless, even though this has never been a Christian country de jure, that is by law, it has always been for a long time a Christian country de facto, simply by practice, and that has Catholic roots, because the people that founded this country were Protestant, but nevertheless, most of their Christian values were taken from what they took from the Catholic Church when they left. So we'll go ahead and take a look at that and maybe talk about it from that Catholic perspective. But, of course, you know, Governor Northam is being called to resign because he confessed to wearing blackface at one time about 30 years ago, I guess. And there was a picture in which he appeared in blackface or in a Ku Klux Klan robe, one or the other. He came out and admitted that he was in that picture. He didn't say which one he was. And then he came out later and said he wasn't in that picture. And so now people are, you know, calling for his resignation. And, of course, that is up to him. What he did was not against the law. I don't see how he could be prosecuted in any way for what he did.
No, or, but it's a very poor taste.
It was in very, very poor taste. There is no doubt about that.
But, you know, when you're 25 years old, I don't think you have much of a concept. Some people don't. They don't.
That's true. And then, of course, he was in, you know, you get in with a gang of other people. And, you know, when you're running with crowds at that age, it's easy to do things that you might not do if you sat down and thought it through instead of sort of getting into that crowd mentality where everybody sort of reaffirms everybody else and doing something that at the time seems like some kind of a joke or something. And then when you look at it and think of it, you know, seriously, it's not a joke and it wasn't a good thing to do and it hurts other people, you know, that kind of thing. The question is now what should be done about it? Well, my suggestion would be certainly not to go into the hysterics that we went into with the Brett Kavanaugh case. What about you, Lynn? What do you have to say about that?
That's true. I get stuck on the fact that the man, being a neurosurgeon, a pediatric at that surgeon, taking care of children, could stand there and so blatantly lay out the fact that infanticide would be perfectly acceptable if this is what the doctors and the mother decided. Now, that is far worse. You're talking about murder of a very innocent newborn.
Exactly. We did talk about that last week. That, I mean, you know, the story about Northam misses the whole point. The story was that he sat there willing to jump either way, I guess. I'm not saying that he was the one that was out there advocating that the law be changed to allow abortion right up to the point of birth or even allow a baby after it was born to be kept comfortable and then a decision made whether to allow it to live or not, which is really a decision to kill it.
And they cite these, what do you call those, incidents where, how often does it happen that you have a baby so deformed it can't survive? That's, you know, what they're saying. Well, that's what we'd use this on. But you and I know deep down that is not what's going to happen.
No, it's not. That's being disingenuous and it's being deceptive to say something like that when you know the implications are going to be far deeper than that. So, again, this is the problem. Here's a good example right there, Lynn, that you brought up. And so we'll move away from what we were talking about last week. The very point that our politics allows, it really allows, for politicians to get up there and make a statement like that and cover up and be deceptive and think that that is okay to do, that they avoid the fullness of the issue, the fullness of the truth of the issue, so that they can keep their foot in both camps and at the same, you know, and manage to get elected. Now, the fact is that the church would speak against this if you are going to obey the first commandment to love your neighbor as yourself, which doesn't mean, you know, allowing, just approving whatever your neighbor does. It means wanting the best for him. Then it certainly is a sin and immoral and unethical to engage in deception like that, to stand up and pretend that the implications of this case are not deeper than they are. So I would say the Catholic Church
to pretend it's one thing when it really is not.
And so we're talking here about, you know, a transgression against God and a transgression against your fellow man. This is serious. I mean, all of us, we're all sinners. Nobody is saying here that somehow the church or the people in the church can stand up and pontificate as if it were above all this. We live in a world that is fallen. We should understand that. It's too bad the Constitution can't even recognize that, that this is not a perfect world. We're not going to build a utopia on it. We're not going to build, the city on a hill on it. And we're not going to have some kind of a man-made program that is going to take us into some kind of new and utopia where all these things go away. None of that's going to happen. None of the people that are engaged in all of this have the ability to do some of the things that are being proposed today that politics is supposed to do in the future. So one of the first things the Catholic Church could speak to is say, everybody come on back down to earth, live in this fallen world, and understand that it's bad enough and hard enough to make our way in it without standing there being deceptive. So that's one of the things I wanted to get at, Lynn. What do you think on that issue?
I think that's very important to understand, because this is why our nation is going down the drain, because everything is being presented as one thing when it really is something else. And what is it that Paul said? I'm going to have to get that Bible and look it up when, during break. But didn't he say, or Christ said, in the end times, they're not going to know right from wrong?
Yes. In other words,
good
will be called evil, and evil will be called good. And that's that double standard. That's that standard that applies when you start formulating and framing things in such a way that you frame it so that for the other side, it's... in other words, it's like telling somebody heads I win and tails you lose. And when you start framing stuff that way, you're pretending that you're making a rational argument, and you're putting the other person in a position, in a defensive position, that he doesn't understand. Because when that joke, when I heard it first came out when I was a kid, heads I win, tails you lose. When you first do that to somebody, a lot of times, they will take that literally. And if you frame political issues in that manner, it's unethical and deceiving. It's, heads I win, tails you lose. And I'll talk about that a little later on with this new nationalism idea that's been going around among the, liberalism. And when I talk about liberalism here, people better remember I'm not talking about whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, whether you're for this or you're for that. I'm talking about liberalism. Liberalism is the idea that was first proposed in the 18th century and actually enshrined by our founders. I'm sure that they didn't understand fully exactly what it was they were enshrining, but it was enshrined. The idea is that somehow you can step outside of all tradition and stand outside of that and judge things by reason alone. That's an Enlightenment idea, and you have to remember our founders were products of the Enlightenment, and that is that Enlightenment idea. The Catholic Church disagrees with that Enlightenment idea and never did agree with it, and understands that you have to stand within a tradition. It's the only thing that gives you the instruments, the values, that is, that you can judge things by. And we all have to judge. This idea of being non-judgmental is also a lot of nonsense, too. It looks like we're going to have to stop here and come back. We're getting late into this segment of the show, so we're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
If you know someone who would prefer listening to Catholic Spirit Radio in Spanish, tell them about the free Spanish app for smartphones and tablets. Also, the Listen Live Spanish button on CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Si sabes de alguien que prefiere escuchar Catholic Spirit Radio en español, diles que hay un app gratuito en español para smartphones y tablets. También está en internet en CatholicSpiritRadio.com. En el botón Listen Live Spanish.
Catholic Spirit Radio was created for you to grow. Therefore, your participation, your prayers, and your financial support are welcome.
Catholic Spirit Radio fue creada para ti. Por lo tanto, tu participación, tus oraciones, y tu ayuda económica siempre son bienvenidas.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio in good old Central Illinois. And we've been talking again about some of the things that have been going on down in Virginia and how actually we can apply the principles of the Catholic Church to those things. And Lynn was talking about the fact that it was prophesied, you know, in Revelation, and I think it is in Revelation, but it's also prophesied in other places by Paul, I believe it is, or Jesus himself, saying that at some point people will be so confused that they will call evil good and good evil, and that's very easy to do simply by reframing things in a different frame, usually in order to get your own way. This is what's meant by talking about Satanism and the devil and so forth as being a mirror image. In other words, a mirror, if you look in it, it looks like it's reflecting back to you the exact reality, you know, that is on the outside of that mirror, but it's really not. It's reflecting everything to you backwards. And so it's, you know, it with words and so forth, it's easy to do.
Right. But, you know, well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say that I'm looking at I went over this book a couple of weeks ago, The Apocalypse by Michael O'Brien, and this is the most important part of that whole book. It says on page 119, it talks about the kind of times we're in and that it's possible we could be in or near the end times. We never know. We'll never know. But the fact is that we're living in a time when it seems as if, you know, never before with all of our media and everything else, that we are projecting this idea of calling evil good and good evil, and then phrasing it and framing it in such a way that it sounds okay. And he's saying here, therefore, the church must once again take up her prophetic office and bear witness to the word, even if it means the judgment of the nations and an open warfare with the powers of the world. That's the most important part of the whole book, and that's not an easy thing to do. And I think all of us as Catholics should look inward to ourselves, and the only guide, the only stability and safety that is going to allow our boat to get through the storms that we're facing is the tradition that has been handed down to us from Jesus Christ through his apostles, through his church. In other words, Christ handed down his teachings to his apostles, to the apostles, his disciples. They in turn handed that down to their successors. And then their successors have in turn handed it down, you know, through the church. The successors were the church and have handed that down all the way to this day. And unless we affirm that and start living up to as much as we can our dogmatic teachings and rejecting the contradictions and teachings of the world out and around us, and not only that, but proclaiming that dogmatic teaching, we don't have anything to hang on to get us through the storm. But if we hang on to that, it is something that is guaranteed to be stable no matter what the world storm may be. And I said that last week, that our Catholic tradition, our orthodoxy, is the only safety that we can have in the storm. And this applies to our bishops, it applies to our priests, it applies to our deacons, it applies to all our religious, and it applies to us. Be true to what your church has taught all the way from the beginning. And that's what we have to remember and hang on to. Now, the world is going to react against this if we do that.
Sure. And if you picture when Jesus said a house built on a foundation of rock will stand and nothing will tear it down, you know, in one sense, he's talking about his church. It's built on rock and it won't falter. On the other hand, he's saying, also, or he is saying at the same time, as far as I'm concerned, I have given you these things to hang on to and to believe. And if you keep them and you believe in them and you act on them as you should, as you've been taught, you will survive. You'll have a harbor. You'll have a foundation to cling to get you through. But if you don't, it's going to all wash away as a house built on sand. it will just wash away. You have no foundation, nothing stable. Well, we're turning what was stable in this day and age to what? What are you turning it to? Just the opposite.
Well, the modernist secular society really hasn't incorporated it. It was the whole idea of the 18th century thinkers that we could, by reason alone, formulate our way to a just and ethical society. And that's not possible. The reason it isn't is because those thinkers themselves held morals, virtues, and so forth that were actually based on almost, even back at that time, almost 2,000 years of Christianity. They really couldn't step outside of that and think differently. They just took it for granted. They took it for granted that you could arrive at those things by your reason. But the whole world in its experience shows that you can't. It shows that every society that has fallen away from the bedrock of Christian teaching has degenerated into a very, very, caustic and very, very unstable society. I mean, you had communism that, imposed all kinds of horror on people. You had the Nazis, Hitler imposing all kinds. All of these regimes were supposedly built on pure reason. They were going to reason their way to somehow or another a great state or a great nation. If we look back at paganism, most people today do not understand the dark side of the early paganism. They only look and understand that some of those quaint practices and so forth that have survived over the years and sort of been watered down, and they look back at paganism as if it was some time in which people had this more naturalistic knowledge and all of that kind of thing, the New Age kind of stuff and so forth. They don't understand at all what the early Christians faced and the tremendous improvements that Christianity made on all of those societies and places. This idea that people living in a state of nature are benign is simply not so. And if we keep living in those illusions, we're going to find that out the hard way.
Oh, indeed we are. And we're on the road now.
But let us, you got something more there, Lynn? Did you have that piece? Did you find it?
No, I can't find it.
Okay.
And I know it's underlined, it's marked and highlighted, and every time I go to look for it, I can't find it. It's a search all over again. But in essence, that's what was said. They will not recognize truth. They will not recognize what's going on. They won't recognize sin as sin. They will accept it as the norm. And isn't that what we're doing when we're talking about Virginia?
Yes. And it goes to show that you cannot take any particular virtue and advocate it at the expense, say, of another virtue or other virtues. In other words, when you read Scripture or you understand Catholic tradition, it has to be understood through the experience and teaching of the whole church, just like Peter said right from the very beginning. Because otherwise, you can take what is a perfectly good virtue, like, say, love your neighbor, and turn that virtue upside down, and this is exactly what Satan does, gets it turned upside down in our mind, so that loving your neighbor becomes something that you shouldn't do. In other words, the church teaches in order to love your neighbor, you have to have his best intentions in your heart. And the best intentions for that neighbor have to conform to something. And what is that something? That something is the whole teaching of the Catholic Church, the whole Orthodox teaching. You take one of those things and put it out of order, and the whole order starts to go. So you can't say, well, this person, say for example, in abortion, you can have situations in which a woman, is facing some serious consequences and some serious things in her life. And so you can say, in compassion for the woman, it's better off if we let her abort her child. But you have to go deeper than that and point out that, you can't to take a life and deny it simply, in order to be compassionate elsewhere is not the whole teaching of the church. And what we have to look at is, I was talking with a gentleman not too long ago, and he was saying, for example, about abortion, why is it that, I think he was using this as a means of arguing for abortion, that even when there were laws against abortion, the laws were never, they never came down on a woman as hard as they came down on, you know, the person that performed abortion or somebody else. So he was saying, suppose you had a woman and you have a young boy and they both face terrible circumstances. Why is it that if the young boy committed a crime, maybe even performed an abortion, he would get more punishment than the woman? And the answer to that, I think, is that we have always recognized that women do not abort their children in societies that want those children, and where men want those children, and where husbands want those children, and where the community helps pitch in to make sure that anyone who has a child is going to be taken care of. And so we have to look at that in that greater light as Catholics and as Christians, that we have a responsibility to provide a society in which children are wanted. And if so, then we women will not be turning to abortion to solve their problems because they won't have to. And so we've always looked at a woman in a situation of abortion as never being as guilty as someone else, because in almost all the time, the fact is that she is in a situation in which for some reason or another, her society, or at least the society she has living, you know, among, reflects the idea that the child is not wanted and is a problem. Wouldn't you think that, Lynn?
I indeed would. And I would take that just a little bit further, though. The instance you were talking about the boy, or the one that performs, the boy that steals something or whatever, and or he's on drugs and he goes to prison for life and so forth, that's a different classification to say that a woman doesn't suffer as much. It's wrong, because she may not realize it, but the chemicals and the hormones in her body, even if you're pregnant for 6, 7, 8 weeks, they change. And there's nature's safeguard is implanted in there. She has the abortion. She will never forget it.
That's
she will suffer, because that is human, it's in her nature to nurture. And I know that's common everyday talk, but the truth is your body, a woman's body and its hormones adapt to a pregnancy. And then when the pregnancy is interrupted, there's a loss. And that loss will never cover up.
That's a good point.
And so she suffers.
That's a good point. She will suffer. And there's a number of ways you can respond to suffering. One of them, some women take, is to regret what they did, to repent, to come to Christ, and they go to like a Rachel's Vineyard or whatever, and they ask for forgiveness and confess their sins and realize that they can receive forgiveness and accept that forgiveness. They can turn their lives around and become whole people again. And that's a wonderful thing when that happens. But there's another way that we all as human beings react to something. We react by either denial, or we react by saying that what we did was good. If we can convince ourselves that what we did was good, we somehow, in the back of our mind, somewhere in our subconscious, think that we can somehow then escape the guilt. And so we'll actually engage other people to help us to actually go along with this and say what we did was okay, and maybe even be blatant about it. And you get a lot of this anymore, these women now that are coming out blatantly and loudly claiming that abortion is a good thing.
Oh, yes, in the name of good. We're doing good for the child who would suffer if he lived. We're doing good for society. We're doing good for the ecosystem. You go on and on and on. They list all these wonderful things they will accomplish as people don't see. They carry out their plan to diminish the population, and especially different ethnic and races.
But that solution is not only not good for other society, for the rest of society, though, it's also not good for the people themselves, because deep down, they never can really truly convince themselves with that line of thinking, and they become actually more fanatical and more fanatical and actually more hysterical over that issue than they ever were before. and they will be driven to do things more extremely than they ever did before, because they have to keep on proving that what they did was good, and it never can be done. I mean, no. you cannot, like they say, get blood out of a turnip or turn a stone, into a rose. And so it doesn't work, and it leads to actually a more dangerous personality to both to the person and society than they had before.
It just goes to show how mankind evolves and comes around, and the turning away from God brings about this confusion, the reverse beliefs that you believe in. Well, you believe that this is all good and it's doing good, but it really isn't. You can't see the truth, what is and what isn't true.
And we'll come back to this in a little bit. We're coming up here in a little bit on a break, but before we end here on this segment, I want to point out that this double standard, this idea of, heads I win and tails you lose idea, eventually that degenerates into a total loss of ethics. In other words, we start out with, what's called political dirty tricks and name them. And then we go along to say, well, dirty tricks are okay if it causes you to win, because I can't do anything good unless I win anyway. And pretty soon it's anything to win is good, and it's not dirty tricks, and it's not a dirty trick at all, no matter how much it seemed like a dirty trick yesterday. And that's the point we're reaching, in which anything goes as long as you win at the political game. Deception, undermining people, cutting people down. In other words, it's dog eat dog, and the survival of the fittest, and whatever you do is good. And that's the point where we reach. That's what happens with that. And if you don't have a standard to appeal to that everybody can agree on, then everybody can have their own definition of what they'll allow themselves to do and won't allow themselves to do. And they can all point at each other and say, mine's just as good as yours. And we have no standard to go. That is the problem of trying to interpret religion. It's trying to interpret tradition and trying to interpret scripture for yourself. If everybody's his own pope.
That's true. But to the ordinary person, the population out there, if you don't see and you don't believe what you've been taught and what is true, if you can't see that and you've been confused by the devil, who's the chief at liars, what do you expect is going to happen?
Okay, we're going to have to take a break at this point. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join Catholic Spirit Radio in a prayer for vocations.
God our Father, you made each of us to use our gifts in the body of Christ. We ask that you inspire young men and women who you call to priesthood and consecrated life to courageously follow your will. Send workers into your great harvest so that the gospel is preached, the poor are served with love, the suffering are comforted, and your people are strengthened by the sacraments. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio in good old Central Illinois. And we've been talking about the issues of our day and what's going on in Virginia, and using it as a jumping point to get into some of Catholic teaching and how it can be applied to our current civilization, and why, as Michael O'Brien in the Apocalypse says, that it's one of the most important things we can do. Actually, that is one of the most important things in that book, that we, the Church, must once again take up our prophetic office and bear witness to the Word, even if it means the judgment of the nations and an open warfare with the powers of the world. And that is probably going to be the case. If we affirm the solid teaching of Catholic orthodoxy and tradition and dogma, it isn't going to be easy, believe me. You are going to get all kinds of flack, people accusing you of being not compassionate or of being a hypocrite, you commit sins yourself, and now you're condemning me, when that's not the case at all. And a good example, I guess, I want to get back to before we leave our three situations down in Virginia. We have the lieutenant governor all of a sudden it turns out that he is being accused by two women now of rape. And, you know, at first everybody wants, first it was sort of like a denial by some of the Democrats that Northam did anything. At first it was a recognition that what he did was not acceptable and therefore he had to step down. But all of a sudden now they're faced with the lieutenant governor who would be put in the position of the governor. Now he is being accused, and they are also in a situation in which they said that any woman who makes a charge like she's making against a politician should be believed. Simply, you know, we should take her word for it. That was the whole mantra that went on during the Kavanaugh case, during the Kavanaugh hearings for the Supreme Court. And now it seems as if they're being skewered, you know, they're being hung, a lot of these Democrats, by their own petard. This is what happens when you try to have some kind of a double standard and justify that double standard just in order to get elected or to defeat the other side, one or the other, that you can do anything goes. And now we see this huge sort of acceptance of trying to, at the same time, live by this standard, that is, that Fairfax should be called to resign because of the accusations, yet at the same time, in a rather quiet manner, not like the hysteria that was enacted against Kavanaugh. And to face it, the Fairfax case is worse because there's corroboration. There's another woman that has come out and corroborated the first woman's story. And you didn't have that in the case with Ms. Ford. So you have that here. That doesn't mean that this man is guilty. So what's the situation here? How should things proceed against this Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor? Well, if you go by Catholic teaching, which, of course, our original law was pretty much based on, since it was some of the bases of Protestant Christianity taken from Catholicism that laid the foundation, actually, for our legal laws, I think we should proceed in this manner. And you can comment on this, Lynn, that first of all, when people make a charge like that, whether men or women are making it, you take them very seriously. I think these women should be taken very seriously and they should be listened to. On the other hand, you can't simply believe somebody because they assert something and say that, oh, it must be true. It may be true. The situation looks like there's, you know, a good chance that it would be. But you proceed from there to investigate, and then you investigate as well as you possibly can to try to find out what are the facts in the situation, what are their stories, and do their stories sound plausible? Do they have that aura of truth? And then you go from there and have the legal lawyers on each side or a prosecutor on each side decide whether or not there's enough evidence there to pursue the case and make charges against this man. If there is, then you make those charges and you have to substantiate those charges in court. And until you are able to do that, the person is presumed innocent until a jury can find him guilty based on the evidence you can put in front of it. I guess that's the procedure, and I think that would be the procedure in any church court, even in the Middle Ages, during that time. Say you, Lynn?
I say, they're following the state way of doing things. You have to go through the whole thing then. Like you say, you have to have somebody come up and make an accusation. That accusation has to be, as you said, investigated and corroborated and stuff. But somebody has to make the charge before they can go on. One of these women or several of them, if several are involved, they're going to have to come forward and press charges. But on the other hand, you have the cultural. The culture has accepted this behavior. And now people don't know how far to keep that culture out of the legal thing or whatever, and it gets all involved. And pretty soon you have them patting them on the head and saying, you shouldn't have did that, but we understand you got a lot of stress and all this other crap. And you get nowhere. But you can, it, like you say, sometimes I wish, you know, the church stood for, it stands for what it's supposed to stand. Somebody should have the authority to stand up there and say, you're guilty, you know, you're not guilty until you're found guilty. But your behavior somehow must have made people believe this. Some people believe it. You, and tell them, if these are the things you live by, you should not be here doing this job.
Well, I think one of the things the church would, one of our rules and regulations is the church says you should live in such a way that you don't cause scandal.
Of course.
Now, if we applied that rule, I think a lot of people on, you know, a lot of liberalism would scream and yell that this was demeaning to women and wasn't giving them, you know, the same treatment as men. But, of course, women and men are different, and there are different applications. But the what is causing scandal? That is behaving in a way, even if it's innocent behavior, in which you cause other people to think that you are doing something wrong, or even worse, that you cause other people to think that it's okay to do. And the church would have cautioned, and all of society would have agreed many years ago, that it was improper for a woman to accompany a man, you know, that she wasn't married to a hotel room, you know, for this kind of, you know, private whatever they were going to do. And in this case, of course, the woman has admitted that the
she went willingly
and that this man kissed her and that the kissing was okay. But then he went further than that and forced himself upon her and made her do things that she did not want to do. But, you know, that doesn't excuse this man. If we can show that he did this, and when I say we, I'm talking about the law, you know, the royal we, I guess I'm using there. I don't mean we here at the station. But if it can be shown that this man did this, then, of course, that is an assault, and he should be punished for it, regardless of whether she gave her permission to be there and gave her permission to be kissed. But the point is that there has to be a standard of decorum for society to live by, and the church's rule was don't cause scandal. And that's what they mean by scandal. Scandal means making people think things that are improper or making people believe that it's okay. And so, you know, in the past, we would have said it's not a good idea. It can cause scandal. Don't behave this way. And everybody would have agreed on it. The procedure would have been set. And if a person violated it, then there was a little bit more guilt on their part in the sense that, well, you knew how you should proceed and behave, and you left that procedure, and this is what happens when you do. But now we're confused. And so you got a good point there, Lynn. There is a confusion there. But all we can do now to try and resolve it is, again, find, at best you can, find out what the how much evidence can there show, can there be. It's all going to be circumstantial. I don't think you can find any direct evidence. You know, if you could, that would be a good thing for the case. And then you have to present that if you think you have enough for a jury. And then, of course, the jury has to be instructed that if they don't think there's enough evidence there to be sure that somebody did what he did, then they should find that person not guilty. And that's all you can do. That's all I know how to do.
But this is part, there's another part to this, too, as I see it. You go to the polls and you vote. How much do we know about the candidates we really that we vote for? Do we honestly really know a lot about them? Wouldn't this type of character show up somewhere?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's hard to, you know, I mean, we get all like elections and so forth are based on a lot of what they used to call enthusiasm, you know, a lot of excitement. And a lot of things are papered over, and people don't check things, and people vote in their self-interest, or they vote simply because they hold certain beliefs. Wouldn't it be a lot better if we had a whole solid bed of morality, law, and behavior all geared to one thing that the Catholic Church at one time gave Western civilization when it had the authority to decide what was proper morality, what was proper virtue, what was proper ethics? All of the law was based on it. All of our law came from canon law, I mean, almost all of the law in the whole Western society. I mean, even the movement against slavery and so forth and everything came because of canon law. We have to remember that in this so-called dark middle age or whatever, that people had this misconception that is painted about the Catholic Church and was painted by those 18th century Enlightenment thinkers, because they really wanted to degrade the church and so forth so that they could enshrine their own program. All of that misinformation is simply untrue. It was the Catholic Church that actually, without having a war or anything else over it, ended slavery. I mean, slavery existed in Rome. Slavery existed when the early church was in existence, and then Rome fell, and there was still slavery. And nobody came out and had a war against it, but applying the justice and the law of the church everywhere simply eliminated it. In other words, step by step and little by little, the slaves became serfs and the serfs became yeoman farmers. Over a period of time, it was ended. We have to remember, it wasn't really brought back into existence in Western civilization until after the Enlightenment, the so-called Enlightenment. It didn't come into existence under under Catholic rule. It came into existence after that. So we have to understand then, if we had that basis to apply, we would have a much better way for all of us to act together ethically and decently, because we could all agree on what was proper behavior and what wasn't. And that's what's lost and can't be regained in a godless constitution, in which there isn't somehow a recognition that there is a just and right religion, and it does have authority to speak. The Catholic Church, still in its dogma to this day, says it does have that authority to speak on morals and ethics, on faith and morals, to the world. And we as Catholics should regain that again. Talk about empowerment. There's real empowerment, not by lording it over somebody else, but by being able to apply equal justice to everybody as best we can. Go ahead, Lynn. You want to comment on that?
I think that we've done a lot of discussing about this, but what it really does come down to is character. A person's character and how it was developed and what they hold as sacred, so forth. We elect these people, and they put on a show that they have such good character, and so on and so forth, but we don't find out till later that they have all these flaws. Some of this must have been, these flaws were present in the background, and we should know about it before you vote. And true, once they are voted in, they should have some values and that they live by. But we accept anything. They want to kill children, they'll tell you a story, and oh, that's good, that's wonderful, you did a good thing. If they don't want you to pray, you don't want to cross on your building, well, that's fine. We don't want you showing off and so forth. It's just a mess. That's all I can say. It's a mess. I wouldn't call it a Virginia Carnival. I'd call it a mess, and it's all of our faults.
But at any rate, I'll sort of bring it to the end of the program here, a quote from a great Catholic of the 19th century, Orestes Brownson, and he predicted these kinds of things even before the Civil War happened. That the United States was on its way down because of the fact that it did not have an authoritative code to live by built into its constitution. And here's what he said. And he said, "Where the people are Catholic and submissive to the laws of God, as declared and applied by the Vicar of Christ and Supreme Pastor of the Church, democracy may be a good form of government, but combined with Protestantism," and here he means he was at one time an atheist, and then he was a Protestant, and then he became a Catholic. He says, "But combined with Protestantism, or infidelity in the people. And what he meant by infidelity, that is in a government that doesn't have a common code of religious ethics. He said, the inevitable tendency of democracy is to lower the standard of morality, to enfeeble the intellect, to abase character, and to retard civilization, as even our short American experience amply proves. And he was saying this after, you know, this part was said, he was saying right after the Civil War, that it already, you know, the very fact that we had one proves that a democracy without an applicable common code of morality and ethics that everybody accepts and agrees on and has a designated authority to say what it is and apply it, unless we have that, we become lost. And that's exactly what is happening today. And
that's right. I agree with him 100%.
And so you as a Catholic should be proud of what you have. It built Western civilization. We should reaffirm this. We should start learning more about the dogmas of our faith and applying those dogmas because they also apply to salvation. And as Bishop Sheen said, nothing is saved without our souls being saved. In other words, if we don't save souls, if the church doesn't go out and save souls, that is, get people to live a Christian life, then nothing will be saved. We will simply continue to degenerate in all of these grandiose ideas of everybody on any side of politics, whatever, will come to nothing. In fact, they'll actually be the opposite of what they're proclaimed to be. So with that, we're going to have to end, and we'll go to our closing prayer. Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.